Hello and welcome to Room Escape Divas, your podcast on everything room escapes. Woo!
Trying to get ahead, but hear the clock tick within the room. Caught up in journals, confusion on what to do. Backtrack, doors, lights, what was left behind. Bookcase, diaries, I'm wasting some time. You read to me from words written overhead. You're calling to me, I can't hear what you just read. Then you say, oh no, we fall behind. The light broke, now we're blind. I am lost, where to look? I can't find a key. I'm wasting time. If we call for the staff, will we be waiting? I'm wasting time. I am lost, where to look? I can't find a key. I'm wasting time. If we call for the staff, will we be waiting? I'm wasting time. I'm wasting time. I'm wasting time. I'm wasting time.
Hello and welcome. We've been on hiatus for quite a long time. I don't even know how many weeks it has been.
I think it's been about 7 weeks.
Really?
7 weeks?
Whoa, we've been delinquent. Yeah. 7 weeks, almost 2 months. And the reason we haven't been doing a podcast is because we've been doing a train event. And it's taking up all of our time and our energy, and we're tired.
Yeah, we want our summer back now. It's been fun, though. It's been lots of fun.
For those of you that don't know, we are doing an escape event, large-scale escape event, on a train with Panic Factory. It is up in a place called Uxbridge, which is about an hour away from us.
Which is Toronto,
yes. We are in Toronto. And there are 144 people on this train, and we have about how many volunteers? About 15 of us
all doing this? Yeah, by now about 15, yeah.
By now, we just keep adding.
Yeah, we keep adding people onto
it. All the kids keep wanting to volunteer.
Yeah.
And it's a 3-hour event with a dinner, and also there's a bar. So Amanda's happy about the bar.
I would be if I could drink at it.
You can drink. I don't mind if you drink. Go for it, man. Pants.
You don't mind if anybody drinks.
No, I don't. Let them go have fun.
I want to drink.
Yeah, you can drink. It's like Mando just probably wants to like have a little.
We are professionals. We don't drink on the job.
I'm
not drinking.
Good.
You can drink.
You'd fall asleep if you drank.
Yeah, so that's why it's fine. I don't mind if you drink.
I want to fall asleep.
Yes, I know you do.
So we have just finished 2 of our events. So there are 4 in total. We finished 2. The first one was...
There's a comic about it. A series of comics about it.
It was...
And we will probably do a podcast with Panic Factory, but I think we're going to cover a little bit of the fun times we've been having now.
Yeah, I hope to do like a full postmortem, but it's fun to have like a... halfway through, what have we learned so far, kind of talk about it.
What have you learned, Manpans?
I've learned that people... Wait, is there going to be... Oh, wait, there might be spoilers if we talk about things in it.
That's okay. We can just say right now that there will be spoilers.
Minor spoilers.
Minor spoilers to our train event. Because after this podcast, after the final train event, there's going to be every
All
spoiler
kinds
on
of
the
spoilers.
Planet.
That's yes. true. So I learned that people love stealing so much.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. People love stealing.
They go overboard.
one of the things that people have to do is they have to steal. They have to steal money. We printed off fake money, and it's really cool, especially when it's printed double-sided. And at first, we just had stacks of bills sitting around for people to steal. And that's what they have to do. They have to steal money. And we told them up front, like, you only need about $2, so you don't have to go too wild on the stealing. We didn't say that. We just said you needed $2 to steal.
No. Here's the key word, at least. You said you need at least $2.
That is true. We need
people
at least.
Took stacks.
But then we would put, like, a stack of bills, like, in this cash box. And then people would just steal the whole stack. Yeah. And then they would steal, and there are these kids taking donations. They'd steal from the kids. They started to steal from other players. They went wild.
Yeah. They saw money in everybody's pockets, and they would just grab it.
It was insane. Yeah. They had fun.
They had tons of fun. Yes.
But the looting was insane.
And we had a money shortage situation.
The second time around, Mike and Ruby couldn't make it around to the second event. They were off. What was it for? They were off having fun.
Family stuff.
Family fun things, right? And it was better contained because we only gave people smaller amounts this time around. So it's like, okay, we're only putting $5 for every child and $5 over there, and then that's it.
We also changed the language of the instructions so that the words at least were no longer in there.
Really? No, I thought it was on the business card it said at least. Where did it say at least?
In the letter, in your opening letter. You rewrote it so that it would say...
No, but I had the $2 part in the business card.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay. Never mind then.
I can't remember my exact wording, so I'm just believing what you say. I don't know where the at least part comes from.
Maybe it was from an original draft of the letter. I don't know if it was always on the business card.
No, it's still on the business card.
Oh, no, I know, but I'm probably thinking earlier in the design process, which is another thing, trying to keep different iterations of the design in your head is hard. That's why it's lucky Errol always has it ready to go at any given point.
Yeah, anyway, we made sure that there were less things to steal. Sorry, there was less amount, so people couldn't just take hordes of it.
A big wad of cash. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although there was... But people really loved that part.
They did. No, they absolutely loved it. They looked gleeful while they did it. And yeah, like, there was... You guys didn't see it, but during the second event, there was a guy who was prancing around the station. Like, that's literally what he was doing, prancing.
And he was doing the... What you...
Oh, the sneaky walk. The sneaky walk
that you see in cartoons.
It was a sneaky
walk. You can't act it out because they can't see it. Man pans, but that's where you're crouched over and your hands are up in the T-Rex position.
Yeah.
And you're just walking on your tiptoes.
But he was, like, prancing walking on his tiptoes with the sneaky T-Rex position. And his wife, I guess, was in front of me. She was, you know, I was asking her to pay for something using this stolen money. She goes, hang on, I have to. And right at that moment, her husband sneaks past her, like, tee-heeing all the way across the station. And she's like, hang on, I have to talk to my idiot husband, and like walks away.
But that was fun. I don't know if you saw any more stealing.
I was at the photo booth, and at the photo booth, the photographer has a big wad of cash in her pocket. And it's funny to see the progression of how of people being too shy at first. And I had to sort of feed them at first to sort of, you know, every time they paid her money to get a picture taken, I would say, like, now you watch your money, okay? Because I'm just not trustworthy, and you never know who's wandering around the station. And so that was kind of their clue to, like, take it.
Yeah.
That lasted about 5 minutes, and then it was just rampant. She'd, like, put a dollar bill in and it'd be gone in a microsecond. Like, some people were really quick. Somebody handed me a dollar bill to pay for the picture, and then someone, like, walked up to me and took it out of my hand.
Wow.
And then I had to be like, excuse me? Like, I had to call them on it, so it was funny.
The interesting thing, as you said, was how people were confused about getting into a role. So one of the things they had was a letter that I wrote for them, and they are taking on a role of being kind of like Ocean's 11 people. I don't even know what to call them. They are just, like, not mercenaries, but they're hired to do a job at the station.
Like, weren't they like treasure hunters?
Like treasure hunters.
Yeah. Thieves.
Thieves. Yeah. Anyway, the thing is that there's a letter that tells them a secret mission, and then they had to do this mission. And I'm going to spoil it, just like I said, is they needed to take a picture in the station museum. And I was a guard that had to make sure nobody took photos in the station museum. But the letter tells him that they needed to take a photo. So he'd come in and he'd say, hello and welcome to Hiram Station Museum. And then no photography is allowed. And then they'd come up to me, but the letter says we need to take a picture. And I said, I'm sorry, what? This letter here says to take a picture. And some people would like, and their players would bring them back. Other people would just show me the letter. See, right there. Right there. It says take a picture. And I'm going, what does this letter mean? I don't even know what this is. It's a letter telling us what to do. Okay. And then they would go off. And then, so the next time, I put a great big top secret at the top. Because I'm like, okay, they're not understanding that they're supposed to do a little bit of role play.
It's a little clandestine.
Yes. And so, the next time somebody shows me the letter, but this letter says we have to take a picture. It's like, what? Why does it say top secret at the top? I don't know, but they were supposed to take a picture. You mean in this top secret letter? And then they folded it over so I couldn't see the top secret part. Yeah, see where it says down here? It's like, what? And it was fun. And I think it's because they're not used to role play and getting into that role, especially for these people. And a lot of them were not escape room people. A lot of them didn't even know we were doing an escape event at all on this train.
Yeah, I think, and you guys can either disagree or agree with me, I think this event, more so even than our previous events, had a bigger range of newbie to enthusiast, more, and it leaned more so on the newbie side. We have a few enthusiasts so far, but
I think it's 80% newbies.
80% newbies,
and
so
50% that don't even know what an escape room is.
Yeah, so some of them, I don't think, were entirely sure what they were booking that night.
Yeah, at least 25% of that 50% was just like, where am I?
Where am I? What am I doing? There was a birthday party last run who I think they just bought the tickets because the birthday girl wanted to do the escape room, and then they just sort of went along for the ride. And so that was kind of funny to see how some of them would get into it eventually. Eventually they would, get into a role or make one for themselves. But there were still, a portion of them who were just sort of like, okay, what do I do? Can you just tell me? Can you, we couldn't help that.
Mike, your car in the first event, you had 20 people that just weren't happy.
I would say maybe one group. So a group of four was okay because they were actually there to play. And the rest of the group was not.
Yeah, it was a definitely big mix of new players, and a lot of them didn't. Well, I'd say at least two people in every group did not want to do puzzles. So there was a lot of hand-holding.
And we had sick people, too, that got, I guess, motion sickness.
Yeah, that was explained, though, I guess, in the first run, the conductor, or the driver that we had, didn't do as good a job as he should have with the driving of the train. It was a lot more lurchy. The second run was a lot smoother.
Fair enough. But I mean, like, if you're going to be on a train, you know that you're going to be on a train. Maybe bring gravel, something to ease your stomach just in case. And you're eating on the train, too. So, it's just be prepared.
We didn't have any sicknesses on the second train. So
that's
this
good.
Is great.
Yeah.
But we did have a lot of, but they also pushed the drink sales more. So we had a lot of drunk people. Oh my goodness, were they drunk. They were crazy.
And that's another thing that we hadn't had at our previous events was having
drinks.
To factor in alcohol and how that affects people's patience levels.
What are you talking about? It affects them amazingly.
Huh?
Yeah, being drunk helped.
I hadn't, in the previous events, like you didn't have to think about how alcohol would affect people, right? And in this one you do. And I got to see it in full force last run, which was, there were, like, people tended to be either get more into it or become a little more impatient with the puzzles.
Yeah. There was a group that has been to all three of our events, and it was funny because when they found out there was alcohol, they're like, you don't have alcohol at a speakeasy, but you have alcohol on a train.
Yeah, that was fun. We had a couple of teams that, or at least one, the one team that had been to all of our events before, and they were hilarious because they came up to me in the line when I was greeting everybody, and I did try to provide some continuity. I had just, the character I was playing, I ended up making her the niece or grandniece of the original character I had in the speakeasy, and so the guy came up to me though and said, I'm not gonna have to flirt with you at the bar, am I?
And you should have said, oh yes.
I said the night is young.
There was this one couple, I do believe in the second event, who looked at the puzzles. And from what I understand, they ripped all the puzzles up and put it into an envelope and just said, we're good. And they just spent the rest of the night having a romantic dinner
But
together.
What about the two other people on
well,
their
team? Well, they were fortunate that they didn't have two people at their table. So it was just them. There was some weird mix-up that happened up with the registration. They thought that they were together, but in reality, they were in two separate cars.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I don't know how the registration worked, so, and I don't really know, something went funny with the registration, so we didn't overbook, we thought we overbooked to begin with, but we didn't, however, they wanted to be together, so we had to figure out a way to get them together, and they were together in the end, so that was good, and it was fortunate, because this couple had their romantic evening of crazed people around them doing puzzles, but they weren't doing puzzles.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough, nobody was looking outside at the view ever.
Yeah, it was a nice view, actually. Mm-hmm. You got to see the countryside. I barely looked outside, mostly because I was focused on keeping the chaos at bay
but
and running around.
For us, because we were busy and we knew what we were going to do. But for these players who didn't even know they were going to be on a train, you would think that, okay, I'm just going to relax and look outside while we wait. No. Yeah.
I agree with you. No, it's funny. Well, like they were all in game mode at that point, and they're still on a timer. So when you're on a timer, and if you care about that kind of thing, I guess not a lot of people did, but you know, you're still like, we have until the end of the trip to finish this thing.
Yeah,
we did something different. I wanted to make sure that everybody had a chance to play the game all the way to the end, so it's solvable by everybody. Some people, especially enthusiasts, are thinking, might think to themselves, wait, I wanted to be the only ones that won. Well, you know what I mean? They won't. Now, enthusiasts, however, will finish the game in about 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah, E4G's team, when they got in the train, they were done at like the 30, 40 minute mark. And I had to say, yeah, this game was geared for non-enthusiasts. Yeah. So you guys may want to just take a break, sit down, enjoy the scenery, but yeah.
No, they solved it really quickly. And also groups that we recognize. Canadian Caper was there, as in the rest of the Canadian Caper crew were there. Mm-hmm. And I know Scott's team was there, Scott Nicholson's team and Rob. And our normal group that comes to all the events.
Yep.
That's Yuval and company. Anyway, they were all there, and they finished really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then newbies, on the other hand. So there's the newbies who knew there was an escape room, and then there are the people that don't know why they're there.
Yeah, those were pretty great. So we had our clue keepers, and our goal, like the first goal of the clue keepers, is to be sort of in character. And when you're giving hints, you know, these people are on the train to do a clandestine mission and to steal something, and you know, you want to, so you have to be aware that you're technically not aware that they're solving puzzles.
They're supposed to be in character.
So they're supposed to be in character. And so when you're giving clues, it's more like, hey, I'd never noticed this about this picture before, or something like that, right? But sometimes people's, you know,
most times
people's questions and people's patience levels, they would just be like, what is the answer? And if people were like that, like we'd cater to that. We're obviously not going to withhold the answer from you.
Most people were like that.
Yeah. Second run, maybe. No, you're not so much the first run.
Yeah, probably. I think we had more enthusiasts in the first run.
Yeah.
In the second run, it was funny because my sister was helping.
Yeah.
After a while, because she didn't know the puzzles very well.
Oh, yeah,
she knew enough to get by, but she didn't know the answers, the exact answers. Like, you'd look at a Mitrian number. Sorry, so the way that it works, that there's a symbol that indicates whether it's a puzzle or not. And it's a thing, it's a numbering system that I made up. And then you had to translate that number. And then there are usually four other kind of parts to it that will give you a number. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she didn't really know the exact answers, but she knew how to get to solve it, at least. So, like, mm-hmm. get a person on the right track. But these people didn't want to be on the right track. They didn't even know where half the puzzles were. So they were all confused. And finally, Lizette would just grab the answer and say, okay, here are the answers. In this column, you fill out these four numbers. It was as blatant as that after a while. And this was to the team that was doing the birthday party in one of the cars.
The poor birthday party team. Yeah, we were basically, the moment they said, we're here for a 60th birthday, what do we do? I sort of radioed everybody and just said, guys, by the way.
So what do you mean by what do we do? Because it's not like, I think they were they the ones confused?
Well, they were the ones who called me out onto the station platform during the first part of the game. So I had to leave my post and go out there because somebody, you know, they were asking one of the volunteers questions that they couldn't answer. And so I went out there. I'm like, okay, what seems to be the problem? And I'm remaining in character, you know, and everything like that. And then just said, so what are we doing here? We're here for the museum, blah, blah, blah. And then they're like, no. I mean, like, what is this? Is it, you know, and their entire team hadn't arrived yet. So I'm assuming the person who knew what was going on hadn't arrived yet. So I immediately just dropped character. I'm like, okay, this is an escape game. This is what you have to do. There are puzzles to solve. You'll be on the train, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I'm not going to try and be clever about this. You clearly just want to know,
what's going on.
Why you're here. Because there's nothing there that tells them why they are there.
Yeah.
As soon as they enter the station, we're all in character.
Yep. Yeah.
And they don't know exactly they're playing an escape room or an escape game.
Yeah, we start it at the station the moment you walk in.
Yeah.
As soon as you get those tickets. So
as soon as you're in the line to get the tickets.
So everybody's all confused from the get-go.
It's like, what? But I think for any of our players that are coming to the next two sessions, should not be listening to this podcast.
No, obviously. there are spoilers galore, so.
We also learned the importance of to-do lists.
Yes. I was taking, what's that phrase?
Inventory?
No, just following what Ruby normally does, and I wrote out all these itineraries for each person individually. And we had a lot of volunteers that had no idea what to do.
What they were doing?
June 24th, the second one, there were a lot of new volunteers. The only veteran volunteers was my wife and Echo and Zoe. Everybody else was pretty much new for clue givers. So that was pretty hectic.
Yeah. We had two volunteers arrive, and they were great. You know, we put them to a job, and that was great. But the job we were initially going to give them was clue giver, and we asked them, so have you done the puzzles? And they went, oh, no.
Do you know what they are?
So that's why Lizette was on puzzles, because we had to switch her, because she at least had more of an idea about them than nothing.
Poor Lizette.
She was panicked because the only thing that she had to comfort her was that she didn't have to give clues about the puzzles. She's like, okay, so I have this job? Great.
And that's all I do.
That's all I do. I'm not even going to pay attention to the tutorial Errol's giving. And then that ended up being bad.
She should have paid attention.
But she did great. Everybody did great. Like, and to pull together.
In the end, number two especially, everybody seemed to have fun. The people that didn't want to play the game and just ripped up the puzzles. They're quite happy to be on a train.
Yeah.
All the people that were... And I think being drunk helps.
Yes.
Because they were enjoying the alcohol.
They were enjoying the alcohol. And they were there for 3 hours. So I broke a lot of rules in this game, what I don't normally do. Reading and math.
Yeah, we gave them tons of reading and math.
Oh, no.
Because it's at a train station, and so they're... At the train station, there was tons of pamphlets. And so we just made more pamphlets, put them out, and had people read them.
Well, it's tough. Like, one of the things I learned about this is, you know, how it's hard to learn how to use an environment to your advantage, especially when it's 144 people that has to get information at mm-hmm. the same time. And since it was a museum setting, pamphlets did make sense to the setting. But
and we didn't use journals.
Yeah. No, we didn't use journals, but you know, things like it would have been nice to have used more audio, for instance, but then the audio systems weren't working all that well, so we couldn't use them. So it gave me lots of ideas for how to do this if we were ever to do something like it again, how maybe to shake that up a bit or to...
Although I don't think anybody complained about the reading.
No, I don't think anyone really did.
Because it's 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's 3 hours. I mean, the reason I hate reading in an escape room... It's because
you're 45 minutes.
Yeah, there's no time to read everything. That's usually useless.
Yeah.
And here, you actually have to understand that you need to be in a role. Mm-hmm. And reading everything that you need to know will help you understand what you have to find and help play in the role that you're doing. Where in an escape room, you're not really in a role. I mean, you are, but it doesn't really matter if you aren't. Whereas in these games, you have to... You have to be secretive. You don't just yell things out. I don't understand this. I mean, yes, you can say that, but you know, you don't. Yeah.
I think also another learning is using the environment in terms of what you can and can't use, what you can touch and what you can't touch, because not everything was movable. Not everything we could arrange the way we wanted it exactly. Mm-hmm. And there, we had to also be cognizant of like pieces of things that were existing that is not part of the game. And how do we exclude it? How do we tell people you can't touch it or it's not part of it? And you don't have to worry about reading all of that either, right?
What I did here is that there was a logo. So the theme of this was you had to get into a museum car, and there was an archaeologist, and his name was Hiram Sinclair, and he had a logo, and anything that pertained to the game had a logo on it. And so I think people after a while realized when they saw that logo and were searching out for that, also that particular Mitrium number, that number symbol, then they knew what puzzle that went to. If they were paying attention.
That's called signposting. Yay! I love using that term now. Signposting.
But because it was all part of the environment, it didn't, you know, I didn't want to label it with A, B, G, and X. Go find those letters. No, anything that had that logo was important.
Going back, though, to when you were saying everybody had fun, that's another thing is... Despite what our intent was with this game, the fact that people had fun, like even if they didn't take away the things that the game was designed for them to take away, it's still a win because they had fun.
Exactly.
Oh yeah, no, my main goal was them to have a great experience, even if they don't do the puzzles. I still want at least the enthusiasts to enjoy the puzzles, even if they finish them quickly.
I think the enthusiasts still got a thrill that they might have been the first ones through, right?
Well, I know Canadian Caper were quite
happy. Very happy about that, yeah.
The cool thing is that we've done a lot of events. Okay, we've done 2 events with Canadian Caper, and because when we do it, we have to pay attention to costs, and we had to pay attention to printing. What Canadian Caper... commented on a lot was A, the props that we had, and B, the quality of printing we were able to do, because Panic Factory has also a printing company and we had a larger budget. So the train, they charge $90 Canadian, which is nothing to you US folks or European folks. That's just a regular day at the bar.
Yeah.
But it was 90 Canadian. That was a lot for me. And when I first heard that price, I was going, what?
Yeah.
Nobody's going to come to this for $90.
Yeah. No, it was nice to be able to have, like, to have Nick and Ray of Panic Factory to make those props. Like, not that we didn't have props the last time or anything, but the fact that they just, it's what they do on a regular basis. And they were able to make wooden things and crazy contraptions and
more realistic looking props.
yes, we could use real. It wasn't just paper.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. There were builds with wood and stuff.
Yes,
and acrylic plastics and
tech.
Things.
Although the tech.
No, we also learned things about tech. It was kind of like a theater show in that, you know, tech will go wrong usually, and it's how you deal with that thing going wrong that it's. And it did go wrong, but we fixed it. And that's actually, that's what it is. That's another interesting thing, is that we have two more shows left, and this is kind of the first escape event, at least, in which we've had more than one run over a period of time.
Yes.
So there's a chance to improve things if it's not working. Mm-hmm. And so when we see 144 players go through, we're like, wow, that completely
did not work.
That part really was botched. Maybe we need to go back and print it in a different way. Or
you mean the money part where everybody stole everything?
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah. It's like, nobody has money.
Or just, you know, when tech doesn't work, we're like, okay, do we need this part? Do we not need this part? That kind of thing.
Yeah. There's room for improvement for iterations of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, one of the difficult parts is that we didn't have everything under our control.
Yes, so that's very difficult. When,
for Canadian Caper, we could choose how the game would go and how many people were there,
yes,
and the flow of the game, where for this train event, we actually had a lot of things that were very loose. Mm-hmm. So even the length of the event was loose. Even the time the train left changed on us.
Mm-hmm. Or how many sessions of this event is going to reoccur.
Everything was changing. And so we had to make the actual event very flexible. So the way that we made our story is flexible enough that if things changed, then we would have to change on the fly with it. Because, you know, if we're on a train and we're missing something, we can't just get off and grab it.
Nope.
That was another lesson from the first run.
No, but they stopped at a station to grab ice at some point.
That's true. I know. We can too.
The big thing we forgot in the first event was the pencils.
Ah, right.
Yes.
But we had enough, like, spare pens and stuff.
We had enough spare pens and pencils that we
distributed.
Recovered,
yeah.
It was.
That was like one of those horror moments, because the train had started moving.
We left the station.
We had five minutes before the train moved.
Right.
And we were searching frantically for these pencils, and we couldn't find them.
Yeah.
If you guys are thinking of doing an escape room on a train, don't do it.
It was fun though. No, like, we paint a bad picture. It's been fun, but
guys can do it, so we can play. Woo!
Yeah. Although there's Black Creek Pioneer Village coming up. That's something that we can do
for sure.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've been talking for about 30 minutes on this. In the end, we really did enjoy it, and we'll probably have.
It's not the end yet.
It's not the end yet. Not at all. I'm hoping we're going to enjoy the next two. Ruby and Mike are going to join us in the next two. So that was at least the next one. Are
for
you guys
sure
joining for the last this? Last one?
I don't remember what the date is.
It's the 22nd of July.
Mike's looking dubious about what? It. Oh, no, he's just not paying attention. Okay.
He's thinking, I have no alcohol.
Yay, someone else gets teased for alcohol now.
But this is great, because I need Ruby as a stage manager. And now Ruby is actually, that's all you're going to do. You're going to organize those volunteers. Because it was funny, because I was technically supposed to be doing it, and for the most part, I had tried to write it all down, but there would still be problems. And while we were in the middle of acting our final part, I'd be hearing over the walkies, because we had an earpiece, so nobody else could hear it. But it's like, I desperately need volunteers in car 106.
It's like,
we need clue givers, please.
and then
just ignore
it. Steph was our actor for the second one, and she just noticed that both Manda and I just went silent in mid-sentence.
Because I was hearing these panicked voices in my ear while we're trying to play out the scene.
Yeah, so
and
we're
it was
playing
like,
on the scene. No, you don't understand. You have to...
we're both listening to see if anybody's responding
the
distress call, as it were.
So that's all you're doing, Ruby. I'm not putting you on signing people in. I'm not putting you on anything except making sure those volunteers are not dying.
Panicking.
Out there, panicking out
no
there.
Worries.
Yeah, that's what we desperately needed. Yeah.
It's all good.
You're on getting people signed in, though, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got your volunteer sheet all written up. It's great.
Okay.
Oh, I do know what I also want is that I've... In almost every one of my games, I've given out my personal phone number.
You want them to delete your phone number?
No. What? But I noticed that I give out my phone number at the very beginning, and then throughout the train event, people still call it to get hints. Yeah. And I think to myself, well, why can't they get hints that way? That's true. Because it's the museum inquiry number. So I might actually put somebody on that phone and say, when you get a call, answer them and help them out in any way you can.
I hope you have unlimited minutes.
Yes, okay. I do. Yes, I do. Yeah. Yeah, no, that'd be crazy if I didn't. But and it's funny because people are like, aren't you worried about giving out your personal number? It's like nobody else has used that number for at any point in time afterwards. No. So,
no, you never got a text afterwards saying great game or anything?
No, I think they all think it's a fake number, except for like those Scott that know Nicholson. My number. Like Scott knows my number. In fact, like, he
starts dialing it. Wait a minute. Yes,
he did. This was in our second event. He was typing in the number. That was actually the final meta puzzle for our second event, for our Canadian Caper wedding event. And then my face comes up as he's mid typing the number. It's like, oh, this is Errol's number. I think Alex has my number. And he recognized my number.
Hmm.
Although I did put a lot of Easter eggs in the so there's a newspaper.
Oh yeah, it's great.
And sadly, some people didn't see their Easter egg.
Oh, yes. I never asked E4G if they saw theirs.
I don't know if they did.
No, they didn't. They didn't notice it in the game.
No, they didn't notice it in the game because they're. They're high efficiency.
Yes, very. they only look for the things that they need, and that's it.
They found what they needed, and they didn't read a thing, which is great. But
so, if you are coming to the train event and you've listened to all these spoilers, look for your name in the newspaper.
It might not be there now because the majority of people,
who have come through, some people in the Slack we mentioned.
If not, you can call Errol's number and double check.
I don't think so anymore.
No, did all the people who came
nice, gone through?
Nice pointing it out that nobody's in there.
Aww, it's okay.
It's okay. No, I'm teasing. Anyway, so it was fun when people do find their name.
Oh, if people are coming to the next two dates... Please return.
Please return. That's the other thing. Stealing of props. It's a real thing.
I get it. A lot of our props were really nice and you got to use it and they look pretty and you want to take it home for like memorabilia, but we kind of need some of that back.
Poor Ray. So we have these Alberti discs and they're just normal cipher disc, two small wheels, and they're all laser cut in wood. And in the first batch, it took Ray 3 hours to make one.
Oh no!
Yeah, and then he realized, oh wait, I have the DPI set too high. So and then it only takes an hour and a half to do one.
Wow!
Yeah.
Still, he has to make like 40 of them.
Yeah, poor guy. And so what he would do earlier, I heard later, because the poor guy didn't get any sleep. He would set the laser cutter to go, and then have an alarm to wake him up 3 hours later, and then set it again.
Poor thing.
So originally, we wanted people to be able to bring the Alberti discs home, but then we realized how much work went into them. It's like, no. But people stole them anyway. So, yep.
And they were in nice little bags with, like, the logo on it, so it was really cute.
Yes, and Ruby cut out all the logos by hand, so that's amazing.
And I had to iron them on.
We do not have a sustainable
I mean... And at the same time, it's not like we're really upset that they take them.
No, like we appreciate the fact that they like it enough to take it.
Yeah, very pretty. It's more along the way, I feel sorry for Ray, because he has to recreate them again.
Yeah.
Then there's people who just flat out break props.
Happened once.
Yeah.
That was funny. It was actually very funny.
Well, that's one way to get it open, I guess.
Seeing Steph's face. Her face, when I saw her look at the prop that was broken. Poor Steph, our actor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So, major spoiler near the end. So, this isn't a minor spoiler. This is a major spoiler. So, you might want to advance about 10 minutes after this if you're listening. Is that she pulls a gun on someone. And she stays that way for the most part. Except all the teams are on her side. And she pulls the gun on us, Amanda and Errol.
Yeah.
And one team near the end decides, we are going to be heroes. Mm-hmm. And this lady jumped on Steph.
Launched herself across the table.
And wrapped her arms around Steph trying to grab the gun. Yeah. It was crazy. And she was giggling the whole time.
She was so drunk.
And I was thinking to myself, like, oh, dear.
But this sounds like a classic Errol move.
No, I don't envelop my body around women. That's just
no. It would have been a man.
Okay, maybe a man, but not.
You do it to Mike.
Okay, that's true.
What?
He trap kicked you.
What? Oh yeah, when you were beating me up and we're supposed to fight.
Yeah. No, I didn't actually touch you that way. I don't think I actually.
And the zombie had locked up.
Yeah, that's true. But I didn't envelop my body around them like this woman did.
Yeah. She had a death grip on Steph. Yeah. We were trying to get her off.
Crazy. Yeah. I was trying to remove the gun.
Yeah. And so afterwards, like, Steph, Errol, and I all have a Skype call, and that's the first thing we discuss is, okay,
how we need to
change the script so that Steph, you know,
is safe.
Is safe. Yeah. Yeah.
That's true. And that's another thing with alcohol. You know, some players can
get too into it.
Too into it. And so it's good. They had fun, though. Looked like they had fun.
Oh, I was walking off the train afterwards, and I thought, maybe she feels embarrassed. No, she was standing in the vestibule, giggling her face off, just like, and her friends were all looking at her like, okay, yeah, we get it. You jumped somebody. But she's like, like, I was like, what? Okay, you clearly had a good night. That's great. That's wonderful.
I would have a good night.
Also bruised our actor. But, you know, whatever.
Oh, what if she's listening? Great for guilting, man. Pants.
Yeah.
Great for guilting.
But it's just like when you go to a haunted house, everybody. You don't touch people.
But we never actually said that.
I'm surprised you didn't take that.
No, I know you like the touch haunts. But, you know, maybe we should have that somewhere where that you're not allowed to touch the actor.
Well, we were talking about that.
I don't know how to put that in.
Yeah, we need to, yeah.
Please audience, be respectful of the staff.
If you have any ideas of how to, yeah, I'll have to work it in.
Maybe we can be in your speech.
I don't know how that's going to work.
You can just say, and then you'll get a chance to go to our museum car, and if you
everything
feel the
is
need
precious.
To touch women.
Not women, just anybody.
Now, we're very pretty. I can understand your temptations. No, that's gross. I just felt gross saying that.
Everything is very fragile in that car. So please make sure to be respectful and do not touch anything.
I do mention the fragile thing.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, we'll figure it out.
What? Ideally, the hard part is that I always tell people not to take photographs and not to touch. But in the end, they're supposed to, right?
Yeah.
And so it's hard to
work it in and expect them to listen because you've been training them to do the opposite.
Yeah. I'm teaching them bad habits.
Yeah, it's like we trained them to be thieves and now
thieves of children or stealing from children.
So there's this one group. This is hilarious. So the way that we structured the end is that we'd have groups of teams come in and we could only hold 9 at a time. And so we had people. Now this museum car, the idea is the teams all have to progress to the museum car, which is in the middle, and we have teams on either side of it, and they finish the first car, they finish the second car, and then they go into the third car. And then we have guards on either side of the museum car, and they communicate via walkie-talkie amongst themselves. I have 5 teams ready. I have 4 teams ready.
Yeah.
Send them in. And then when I say, okay, send them in, they all come in. Now, sadly, the great thing was that my boss was there. My boss's boss was there. And I was really excited to have her come because she's great and she's wonderful. And they come in and I go over to their table and they're in the museum car and I'm talking away with them, trying to stay in character. And then she whispers over to me, "We snuck in." And they're going, what?
What do you mean?
What do you mean you snuck in? Oh, we snuck in because there were supposed to be thieves. And I said, do you have this? Oh, yeah, we have that. Do you have this? Not really. Because we snuck in. And then I realized, it clicks in to me that she's being
bypass
literal.
The guard.
She bypassed the guard and just ran through with her team. Because And the guards are pretty, you know,
liberal.
It's
they are liberal with the answers, but they're more so they keep track. And so I was shocked that somebody was able to.
It's not a big entrance either.
Yeah,
it's like a doorway.
But they might have thought
that they were part of the same group or something.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
True. And there were some problems in the second run where some people would say, yeah, I'm on this team, and all of our teams are four. But then you'd have groups that would come in groups of 10 and would just say, no, we're on team 72. And then that would include all 10 people.
Yeah, even though, because they just wanted to do it together because they were friends.
Oh.
And so they're like, this was our, should we out them? No.
No, I was able to manage that in the first run.
Yeah.
I broke them up. I made it very clear. You are together, yes. You can solve together, yes. But you come as four.
Then and then as she's telling you this, like on the other end, where like somebody was like, "There's an extra team in here," because we thought it was some sort of organizational muck up because they sent in too many teams.
Mm.
So we had to send some poor team out.
Like, sorry, you saw something.
Because we thought, I swear, didn't you say you had six? Yeah, and they said they had three? Yeah. Well, that's nine. So how come you sent four teams through? I didn't, I swear. And like, you sure you didn't have four teams? And it was.
And then I'm just going, a team snuck in, guys. And then we were supposed to be thieves, so we just snuck in.
Which makes sense. We can't fault
it's
them for
very
that.
True.
It's like, sure.
Anyway, we should move topics before we talk all about it, because we still want to do a full podcast on this.
The full podcast. We still have two more events.
Oh, yeah.
So we're expecting.
And Nick and Ray will be here next time.
They'll be able to verify that they're very tired and will never work with us again. So we've been having fun, though. We've been playing board games. You guys we just had Canada Day. This will probably release a week after that. But Mike and Ruby went to this escape room. It was like an escape event, a pop-up for Canada Day. And it's interesting because they got an escape company, not from the GTA, I think. And the GTA is filled with escape companies. So any person that's interested in escape rooms, we have the worst of the escape room divas. And I don't mean just us. I just mean enthusiasts. Mm. I think we've bred very particular enthusiasts that just want the best, you know. So Mike and Ruby and Leader, and I think E4G all
went.
Part of E4G all went to do this pop-up for Canada Day. And they were promoting it, you know, because, you know, it's the 150th anniversary for Canada. So there's a billion things going on.
Yeah.
I didn't actually leave the house because I was worried about the crowds. And it would have been insane. But you guys went out and had fun.
I guess you could say that.
How long was the event anyway?
So they
1 hour, right?
So it was an hour?
Well, no. Okay, so they had time slots throughout the day. I think it was like 3 to 8. And with each hour slot, they allowed up to 10 groups of six. So
60 people.
Yeah,
how large? 60. And it was in a tent.
It was in one of those like
white tents that you see at like fairs or whatever, and it fully covers the sides, and you might have like one or two plastic windows kind of things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And could it hold 60 people?
It was a tight fit, because the thing was, in our game, and it was like one of the last games, you were supposed to go with the team of six. Some people brought like 8 or 10 people because they brought their kids and their friends and whoever went to the fairgrounds with them. So it wasn't really, at least in our game, really enthusiasts or people who really did escape rooms. So it was...
So you would hope they would have made it a bit easier. Or
yeah, no, well, so that's the funny thing. When we finished, they told us we were the third group of 60 to finish the room.
Wow.
Yeah.
And is that for good reasons? Like, the puzzles were super challenging in a fair way?
I think theming-wise, when we went to a Canada's Day celebration event where they were hosting this one time Canada's pop-up I was expecting it to be more patriotic of some sorts, or at least Canadian themed, but the theme was bowling. So I was really confused.
A national pastime.
Bowling with poutine. I mean, not even hockey or lacrosse.
Right? So I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, I see bowling stuff everywhere. Got it. So yeah, that was theming. I was quite disappointed.
Did they at least have a bowling alley?
Pictures of bowling alleys.
Wow.
They had bowling balls, but it was like the 5-pin ones, so the small little ones.
Okay.
And bowling shoes. We're not sure if they've been worn.
They look like the ones that are in bowling alleys, so maybe they had a bowling alley to spare. I don't know.
But yeah, all in all, it was... Yeah, I mean, there were some big logical leaps that you needed to make, but they did have a hint system. So I'm pretty sure most people would be using their hints because we needed to use ours as well.
I think we used two, right?
Yeah.
And people sometimes wonder why we're so hard on escape rooms. And it's because we see escape events not done very well. And they create such, you know, frustrating puzzles. And we just want to tell them, oh, look, who are these people? Okay, so the Ruby's just showing us who is doing this. I don't know if I want to. They're from Muskoka.
Yeah. The thing is, I think they really did try to put effort into doing the room, and they did ask us at the end, you know, did you have a good time? We couldn't give an honest answer, you know, that we did, but, you know, they did seem that they tried to do or tried to make a game for people to enjoy, but... Yeah,
and I think... Like, for the most people that went, it wasn't enthusiasts, or at least not that we recognized. It seemed like there were families of all ages, there were children, there were seniors there, and they were just there to enjoy a long weekend of some sort. So I'm pretty sure that's kind of the audience they were targeting, more so than enthusiasts that prefers logical puzzles and maybe harder puzzles, things like that.
Although you did say that they were completely illogical puzzles.
I wouldn't say illogical, it's just... family-friendly fun.
Were they actually family-friendly puzzles?
It got everyone to work together, to talk, and to talk to each other, and to talk to other players. I actually had, we were at one of the tables doing a cipher thing of some sorts, and this mom and daughter, they seemed to figure it out. They figured out, like, which letter went with which item, and after they figured that out, I guess they couldn't figure out what to do after that. So they looked at me and whoever else was standing with me, and they're like, so what do you think? What are we supposed to do? What's going on? And I'm like, I don't know.
It's almost like our train event.
Yeah. Like, they just had no direction on what they were supposed to do with the rest of that. Although, like, that part, I would say, if you've played escape games, if you're an enthusiast with puzzles, you would correlate it to, hey, these symbols are appearing over there, so maybe I should use them over there, kind of thing. But there were just some. I know Leader was very upset at the scrambled painting that she had to recreate on paper and draw it out.
Oh, wow.
She was very not happy about that.
Yeah, big spoiler alerts if they ever do this event again.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing. Errol mentioned us being hard on escape rooms and, you know, really reaming them out when we find something we don't like. But another big reason for that is that for people who have never done one before, and this is their first experience, sometimes their thoughts are, I must be dumb, or I can't do this, and then they'll never try it again because they figure... That's the reason for it. It never occurs to people that maybe sometimes the puzzles are unfair, or that it was just at a difficulty level that was, you know, not geared towards them.
Yeah, and I think that was something that we saw with this event, because initially when we got there, you could clearly see this was a little more than 60 people.
Yeah.
But about a quarter of the way through, there was probably less than half, if not a quarter of the people there. So...
Oh, so you mean like in 15 minutes, everybody just left?
Yeah, yeah. Like, wow. They weren't getting it and they just walked out.
Yeah, like, I don't think they were stopping people from leaving. It was just an open tent, so people walked away.
But they needed a train. Can't leave.
Never leave. So technically, they did escape.
Yeah.
So always an option just to turn the game off.
Exactly. And I think there were groups, we heard them talking, where one or two people have done escape rooms and they're trying to justify what's happened. And they were saying, oh, the rooms I've done aren't like this. So this is probably just harder. The puzzles are a bit different compared to what I'm used to. So it caused a little bit of confusion, I guess.
And that's why I hate bad puzzles.
Sorry.
True. Hate bad puzzles.
Yeah, you don't want people to be deterred just because it wasn't a good game, right? So these kids that went, if they really hated it, they may grow up to never, ever want to play another escape room again.
And if you want to talk about bad puzzles, come to one of our events and you'll get Errol's number.
Yeah, and you could talk
you
to me.
You could just talk to him about his puzzles.
About my puzzles, and now you don't like them. That's fine. No, I know my puzzles are. My puzzles usually have a structure to them, though. Although I do know for sure that a newbie that isn't used to puzzles and a puzzle structure, they won't be able to see the structure that's the foundation that underlies it. So anybody that's, for example, enthusiasts will see it immediately. They'll see, oh, this is, as I said, you actually have that number, that symbol that states that all of these, that these are all puzzles to the overlying puzzle. So I just got to find all those symbols and they all match with this underlying foundation. Where some puzzles in some escape rooms are just random and you don't know why. Like that one we did where we went, oh my goodness, we
recently?
Were so mad. Yeah, recently.
Ah, that one.
Oh,
I broke something. Not out of anger.
No.
I just dropped something by accident.
Yeah. We did the thing that, you know.
Oh, I felt sorry for the owner. We were really, but we were just so mad.
Oh, well.
Oh, dear. I felt so bad, but we were so, it was.
Frustrating.
At the end, there was a searching puzzle. And it's not, and it was really hard searching.
Yes.
And I wasn't even complaining about the fact that it's a searching puzzle.
No, because we know we're bad at them anyway.
We know that we're bad at searching puzzles. So I'm not going to complain about a searching puzzle because people enjoy it. However, during the searching puzzle, it looked like there was a pattern to the searching.
Yes.
And so we followed that pattern. And in the end, there wasn't a pattern. It was just off by one.
Yes,
and
one thing didn't follow the pattern.
And I'm thinking, well, it just made me so upset. Because when you create puzzles and there is an underlying pattern and foundation underneath, you will be able to, then it becomes more clever as you see how everything fits together in the end. Like, even if you don't notice the pattern, that once you sometimes solve it, you'll see it and go, oh, I see how that all works, and I should have realized it and solved it otherwise. Because when you solve a puzzle too, usually you try to find I think I said this before, an anomaly in a pattern or a pattern amongst the chaos, and that will help you try and solve a puzzle if you can find one of those two things. And so finding a pattern can be very satisfying. It's like when you do a cipher, right, Manpans?
Mm-hmm.
Are you listening?
No, I am listening.
Okay, and then you see a pattern with a cipher, and then you start to realize, oh, I'm starting to see where things fit, and then you get excited, right? Mm-hmm. I'm surprised. I really try not to give my opinion of an escape room right after.
It was a pretty room, though.
It was a very pretty room. But I think it's because that searching kind of took me over the edge. That he just had to.
And I think part of it was because he knew who we were, too.
Well, I didn't know they knew who we were.
Do they know that?
No,
I think he knew.
Oh, he knew.
No.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're listening.
It might be.
Oh, no.
And then there was a lockout safe in there, and you know how I feel about lockout safes. I think I used the term, and you
and
know.
And there was blacklight searching.
Yeah, there is. And so I mentioned that I despise lockout safes. I said that straight to his face. Sad, poor guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, and it's hard, especially if you know who we are. But then again, you know, we could just be blowhards and say that we know about puzzle design, and then we just don't. And so then you could just ignore us.
True.
But then if everybody hates your room.
Yeah, it's one of those, if everybody's complaining about the same thing, maybe you need to revisit it.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm going to get water too.
Actually, thinking about unsatisfying endings, that Canada escape we did, even though we escaped. It was like, okay, so the lock's open. Now what? The lock's open. You guys won. And everyone else is still searching and playing. It's like, okay. We're done. Yay.
Yep.
We're actually getting to 59 minutes now.
You could do your outro.
I could do the outro.
Without Errol here.
Without Errol here. Room Escape Deeps is brought to you by Inverse Genius. You can go to InverseGenius.com. Oh, no, he's back!
You should have done it sooner!
I know!
Where's your water?
Why do I drink it
already? Oh, okay.
He flashed water on my glasses.
He stuck his fingers into her water.
Yeah, I don't want to drink it anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can get yourself new water. Oh, these are Errol finger waters. Oh.
Gross. Now she's really going to puke.
Did you already say your...
Bye-bye.
No, she didn't fully say it.
Okay. And you guys should be careful because you're going to clip.
Yeah, you're going to clip.
Room Escape Divas is brought to you by Inverse Genius. You can go to InverseGenius.com to find other podcasts just like this one. You can also go to our Facebook page and just click the like button. Find the Room Escape Divas Facebook page. You can also email us at roomescapedivas@gmail.com. And if you're using Twitter, please use the hashtag REDivas. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.